Welcome to the Monster Hunter Podcast Show. It's episode 21 for the 8th January 2011. Hi, and welcome to the Monster Hunter Podcast. I'm Christian from Game Design Reviews.
Hey, everyone. This is Social Dissonance, also known as Shepard from YouTube.
And I'm Nick Malone. I'm from beforegamedesign.com.
And we are three Monster Hunter enthusiasts who decided to come together on a weekly basis to discuss strategies and share our experience. And today we have an exciting episode with plenty of news and surprises. For once, we have a super exclusive guest. Today with us is none other than Mr. Brady Gamer himself, Michael Abbott. Hi, Michael. It's so nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Christian. It's nice to be here.
So I don't know what the overlap is between our audience and your audience. So maybe you can explain to our listeners our watchers on YouTube what Brady Gamer is about.
Well, Brainy Gamer started 3 years ago, I guess almost 3.5 years ago now. And my intention was to build a site that would attract an audience where we could have thoughtful conversation about games and a safe place to be able to talk about games without hopefully too many trolls and too many angry, gnarly people. And I think pretty much we've done that. I post about 3 posts a week or so, and I also do a podcast. And I especially enjoy engaging in conversations with people who read my posts, and I enjoy the community of gamers. It's sort of the whole thing for me, really, is just being part of this community and helping to contribute a little bit, whatever I can.
You still do the Vintage Game Club, right?
Yes, I host the Vintage Game Club with Dan Bruno and David Carlton, and we've taken a little break for the holidays and with trying to get through some games that we're all playing, but we're always playing a game over there, usually more than one, and people are welcome to come on over there and check that out too. We play older games. For us, vintage can be, even a 2-year-old game could be vintage. For us, it's more about interesting quality games than like how old the game is.
I must say, for me, it's really exciting to have you here on a podcast, because you're actually one of the reasons why I started playing Monster Hunter at all. I always read your blog, and I always find your insights in game analysis so inspiring. And one day I saw you posting about Monster Hunter. It was around the time where Monster Hunter came out in Europe. And so, it was kind of like an inspiration also for me. It contributed to me having this epiphany that it might be an interesting game to look into. And it was really interesting to playing the game and reading also your blog posts, because you posted a couple of blog posts about Monster Hunter, and reading them side by side of playing the game and kind of comparing my experience to yours. I think you nailed down a couple of very important aspects of what this Monster Hunter experience is about. And we can talk about it when we go on the quest in a minute, because one of the new changes in the podcast right now is that we're also playing in Monster Hunter Tri today. So actually, I managed to move from the EU servers into the US servers, and we can be all together in Monster Hunter Tri today. So what are the monsters who we are going to fight today?
Well, we have at least the first two nailed down, and if we have the third one up from one of us, it's the first quest we're going to do is going to do a Kuropeko, because I believe, Michael, you had a really interesting post on the Kuropeko in terms of how his behavior is kind of something that's usually a lot more involved than what you see in other games, in terms of its ability to bring in other monsters and have different abilities throughout the actual fight.
Yeah, I hated that creature for a long time.
Well, we're going to destroy him, I'm assuming. So at least the four of us. And actually, I think it's really interesting that the four of us all independently selected different weapons here. There's actually no repeats at all. So that's actually kind of cool. I was thinking we do the Kuropeko. I think the Gobul might be kind of fun. He's also kind of like a really hard guy, but also really fun when you get some strategy involved. And then I think Nick was saying that we should go ahead and maybe give the quest Jump Four Jaggies a try. It's like kind of like a bonus quest at the end. And we can probably get a lot of questions done during that time, at least.
Yeah, because it's a longer quest, and it's actually quite easy to play because we are fighting only great Jaggies.
Yeah, so, I think Kuropeko does show up at some point, though, if we want to have a second chance at revenge.
All right, so we have all selected a quest, and we can get into it.
Yeah, I'm trying to use mostly level-appropriate stuff here. You could have a Ludroth hammer at this point in alloy armor, but we're not going to hold ourselves to too strict of a standard.
Yeah. And by the way, we also realized that this is going to be the sick cast. All of us are sick today, or at least were sick in the recent times.
Horribly ill. Yeah. Terribly, terribly ill.
Hey, ever since the end of the last podcast, I've been extremely sick. I'm only feeling well when I do the podcast.
you see, I mean, it's probably because we lost to Tigrex. I mean, it's certainly it destroyed us emotionally and
I was really devastated. Yeah. Well, we lost to Plesioth. Well, no, it was Tigrex first, and then we lost to Plesioth.
Yeah, and people in the comments also suggested that we are down talking Plesioth so much, and you know, Plesioth just took revenge on us. You know, don't mess with the Ples.
He's mad.
He's horrible. Okay, so this first fight is going to be the Kuropeko, and I think, Michael, a lot of players are agreeing with you. Now, this is a really a very annoying creature.
And when I posted that, I was a relatively new player. I still am. I'm only level 10.
Yeah.
So I think when people write about games, they often write about them from the perspective of, you know, a lot of experience and being a real veteran. And if you look at those posts, I'm still a relatively new player when I wrote those. And I think that sort of informed my point of view is, you know, how does it feel to play this game when you're kind of overpowered by these monsters? Mm. And it's half the fun, really.
Yeah, but kind of the experience you wrote about is basically a Monster Hunter experience at every step of the way, unless you're maybe at some point you're very, very far ahead, you know, that every new monster you encounter is this new huge, overwhelming challenge. And the game is about figuring out how to overcome this challenge.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's for me, the game was a huge surprise. I'd never played a game like it. So, I mean, for me, it was just a tremendous, tremendous experience of learning how to play a multiplayer game on the Wii that, you know, I didn't even know that the Wii had multiplayer games.
Well, this is really the only one of its kind. I mean, there's nothing that even comes close to this experience.
Yeah.
I think the overwhelming sense of fear is what I enjoy the most. Or would I use? I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't really have it as much as I used to. But you know, my real experience with Monster Hunter began with Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, and I didn't have anybody to play with, and so like I had to solo my way through the entire game. And whenever you went up to a new rank and had a new monster to fight, like it was just terrifying.
Yeah,
like, you had no idea what to expect.
Yeah. And that game really resets its difficulty every single level. You're just like, oh god, I have to do all that. The sense of fear that I had the first time I fought a Tigrex in that game, I don't think the only other time I've ever felt that amount of fear is the first time Devil Joe shows up in high rank. You're just kind of like, what? Who's that guy? Why did I just die?
Well, my opinion, like, Tigrex is worse than Devil Joe. He is really scary. Like, not so much anymore in Portable Third, because there are ways to get around him. But in Unite, like, the way those hitboxes work, like, if he's coming at you, like, you're going to get hurt. And you're going to get hurt really badly. Okay, I got to be careful. I don't want to launch anyone.
Yeah, so we've found Kuropeko. He's in Area 5 right now, and we all gathered around him, and we are trying to hit him, actually. I think Kuropeko is design-wise, is such a good choice for I'm sorry, Patty. he's such a good design for early monster.
Hey, no worries. I gotta tell you, it's been so long since I played this game. It feels so good to hit this thing.
Yeah. Especially if this, when he's paralyzed and you can, he can kind of can move and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, he's kind of has this like very cheerful, very very crazy design, so it isn't quite as terrifying at first. But he is so annoying.
Oh, sorry, Shepherd.
That's all right, man.
I have watched him, I think, 3 different times.
I like it. Well, what's cool about him is he's a monster that scales in difficulty really well.
Yes.
Because when you do get to high rank, he starts sending out Devil Joe, which is probably one of the most horrifying abilities any monster in this game could ever have, is the ability to bring that guy into the fight. And it gets worse, Nick.
Is there another monster? Is there another monster that has more character and love than Devil Joe?
Oh.
No. Well, certainly he's the most visually dynamic monster that's ever existed in Monster Hunter, because like he changes so much throughout the fight.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
One of these days, Brainy Gamer will have to get you to Devil Joe level so you can enjoy the...
I love that.
He's just such a dynamic monster. He has so much character. You know he's angry. You know when he's hungry. You know when things are about to go wrong.
And you also know when he's aroused.
Yes.
It is. Same can be said for you, Vic.
I forget. How do you stop crouching? I can't remember the command for that.
Oh,
A?
If you don't have your weapon out, press B.
Yeah, it's just B. It's the same button you press for crouching.
Revenge.
Okay, so
this is also this drooling mechanic is still the most amazing thing I think I've seen. Such a weird idea for a game. Like, well, what if the monsters are drooling?
Yeah. So we're doing quite well with Kurupeko right now, and Kurupeko is drooling. So that means kind of he's exhausted, right?
Yeah, they slow down their attacks. Does their attack power go down?
Their attack power doesn't go down, but some attacks will begin to fail, and they become much more susceptible to certain different like items, like flash bombs and traps will have extended durations.
Yeah, I noticed that the thing with the traps, that really helps. So it's always sometimes a good idea to, if you have any traps with you, to just keep them tucked away and wait until the monster is exhausted and use them when you see that he's exhausted, because you will get so much more out of your traps this way. So, wow, this Kurupeko, we are destroying this guy. I mean, we're really taking revenge on him.
Revenge!
There we go. He finally
fell. Oh, that's it. That's it.
You know, I mean, I was I read your article on the Kurupeko, and I thought, you know, it's really... I read the article actually before I fought the Kurupeko. So when I first fought the Kurupeko in this game, I was terrified. I was really, really genuinely terrified. I had problems with the Great Jaggy already, because I wasn't so accustomed to the controls yet. I had really, you know, struggling with Jaggy. And then I saw Kurupeko and he did all these tricks, you know, sometimes he's flying in the air and I can't hit him. I don't know what I'm doing right. Sometimes he's spewing mucus. Sometimes he's calling in other monsters, and I already have troubles with one monster, you know.
Well, it's interesting too, because don't you think he has personality. He's a pompous monster.
Yes.
You know, he actually has personality, and it affects your attitude about him, because he puts his chest out, you know, and he's very defiant, and then just when you think you've got him, he flies away and taunts you. And yeah,
definitely. And I find it's such a great design for a monster. If you compare it to other monsters from other Monster Hunter games, like I think the equivalent in Monster Hunter Freedom Unite would be the Katku.
Yingaruga, I think, has probably this similar personality, but yeah, Kaku.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to tell, because there's no like direct equivalent, but you know, it really shows you that Monster Hunter Trial really brought so much new ideas into Monster Hunter. Like it really fleshed out the characters of the monsters themselves, so they're really unique and you know, they distinguish each other from each other.
They have great animations too. I was surprised early on. I wouldn't begin to know how many animations they would have typically for each one, but there are enough of them that when you confront a new one, you don't see the same thing over and over.
Mm. Definitely, yes. So, yep.
No matter how many times you fight a monster, you could start fighting one not completely used to it. You know, you've been fighting him for forever, and suddenly this monster just surprises you and stomps you down for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll host a meal if you want, guys.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If you haven't eaten yet.
Oh, I think Michael is still sifting through his awards.
Returning. Yes, I am. I leveled up, guys. I leveled up.
Oh, wow. Woo-hoo! Awesome.
I was thinking, I mean, seeing as we did that one so quickly, do we want to do a bear off as well?
Well, let's see. Let's just see what the time says when we're through with it.
Okay. When we do, all right, so we'll do the Gobul next.
In your menus, when you do to the meal thing, go to Mooch a Meal.
Okay. Meals, Mooch a Meal.
Yeah, and if you're all, yeah, you're all mooching.
Yes.
That's okay. Let's see, polishers, specialists.
I'm just so excited.
And never mooched a meal yet.
Oh, well, here
apparently,
you go.
This little dance means I'm mooching a meal.
Yes.
I think I'll give us all, I'll give us all Defender. That works.
Mmm.
Look at that. Yeah, look how big that meal is.
Om nom 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 nom.
Let's see, what do we get? Do we get bomb? I want the bombs.
Nice.
But specialist is easy. So do we want to do the? We'll do the global next then.
Yes, we can do the global. Why not?
Okay. Well, then I want to switch my gear just a little bit because he's not really weak to Ludroth paws. Mm. What should I use on him?
I'm doing something I've never done, and that's using the sword and shield on a gobble.
Oh,
that sounds fun. It's not a little crazy.
So Michael, have you ever fought the Global yet?
No, I have not.
Oh, this is going to be a first one. Well, Global is actually, and that's kind of interesting because Global, that the first time we were playing Try on this podcast. So the Global is actually one of the monsters that was, it's kind of a new type of monster for the Monster Hunter Try, I guess, because you fight him underwater, which is kind of like the distinguishing characteristic of Monster Hunter Try.
Yeah, I love the underwater stuff. Nick, did we? I don't think we fought one, did we? When we played months ago,
that was with is it the Video Games and Human Values Initiative? Is that?
I can't remember. I can't remember.
I think I can't remember if we did or not.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Roger and them were probably not high enough to fight. Yeah, so I doubt we did.
I do remember chasing a monster underwater, and he's very wily, and he chooses new areas and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm,
so
yeah.
maybe. I'll know when I see him. If I have a visceral reaction, you'll know that I've fought him.
I'm pretty sure we're going to do fine. We're going to fish him out first. So who's going to peck the frog?
Oh,
so I got a bunch of frogs. Does anybody have perception on?
Perception? Yes, I have perception. No, I have a perception on my old equipment. This doesn't have any perception.
I can equip that real fast. Let's answer a question while I do that, because it's going to take me a couple seconds.
Yeah, sure. So we have a couple of questions. Here's a question from a guy called Devil Bob. He's asking us, if you're using a hammer and you knock out a monster, if you hit the monster in the head while it is knocked out, does the knockout damage count towards the next knockout?
I was wondering this as well.
Yeah.
No, to my knowledge, while the monster has that status currently inflicted, mm-hmm. you cannot generate an additional points to for the application of that one thing. So if a monster is paralyzed and you're hitting it with a paralysis weapon, that won't work in terms of paralyzing it for the next time. You have to wait for that at the end. That being said, as soon as they get out of the animation, if you can, you know, time your attacks well enough, you can usually get off like a golf swing or a super pound just before they've completely recovered, and maybe you can start building it up, I think, starting as early as then.
Hmm, okay.
So, I mean, I think really good people can time it so that their golf swing will connect just as the monster recovers from the stagger, and usually that's about the right time anyways, and that's a good way to start boosting up your KO damage while they're down. An interesting question, actually, I don't know the answer to this, is whether the KO damage you're doing while they're knocked out adds to them being exhausted. And that might work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
I don't know about that, though.
Well, we've been talking about this before the podcast, but, I mean, Monster Hunter has these huge, amazing mechanics and stuff like that. And, you know, to explore the game fully takes such a long time, and there are still going to be some kind of mysteries or some kind of, you know, weird mechanics you're still not really familiar with, right?
Oh, yeah, there's never, ever really a completely definitive answer, because it's not like we're the actual programmers in Japan. There's been a lot of looking into, I guess, the game's code, like in terms of like changing different hex values. And I understand there's this cheat that's available where you can kind of see like the actual numbers of the actual tolerances and stuff like that. So I guess you can figure some of those things out.
Mm-hmm.
But in for the most part, I prefer not to read too deeply into that, because it kind of ruins the mystery of the game a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it's such a cool idea to kind of keep some stuff hidden from players and enable players to kind of create theories about it, or maybe leak some information also to players, so they can kind of spread this information in the community, you know.
Trap and bombs, guys.
Okay.
So just get ready. I'm gonna start fishing soon.
Okay. Yes.
So just get your bombs ready if you have them.
So we have to stand at the spot where you're going to be appear. You already put in a trap and at this.
Very it's already there.
Okay.
Awesome. I'm very efficient.
Okay. Yeah, I saw it actually. I never knew that you could fish him out with a frog. I saw this strategy on your videos, and it was, you know, it really blew my mind.
Well, we're about to blow Goebel's mind.
Yes.
Careful! I'm sitting down in a small barrel bomb. Okay.
Okay.
Just go ahead and start stabbing.
Yes.
So I got him in the wall there.
So what I wanted to talk a little bit about is how I got on the US servers, because actually that's an interesting thing. We were planning on getting together on Monster Hunter Tri for quite a while, and I ordered the game from America, because, you know, you have to use the American version in order to play with people in America. Kind of Capcom split the entire online community into different regions. And so just recently, you know, the game took like a month to ship. Somehow they had like really, really great troubles to ship it to me, and it arrived just a couple of days before this podcast, and I was so relieved when it arrived, because it meant that we would be able to do this podcast today. However, the problem was, I got stunned by Global again.
Yeah, I'm stunned with you.
And the problem was that that once I put the game in my Wii, I realized, oh my gosh, Wii is actually not region free. I totally forgot about it, so I wasn't able to play the game on my Wii console. So in order to do this podcast today with you guys, I actually had to hack my Wii. So there is actually this huge community of it's basically a homebrew community, but at some point people figured out on how to install their own software on the Wii, and so this huge, amazingly rich community was created on about Wii homebrew stuff. And I had like a small insight into how this everything worked. I actually installed a little bit of the stuff way back when I first got my Wii, and when the first time all these exploits appeared. But I never actually used it. I tried a couple of programs that appeared.
Oh, you just had it like chilling out for a while?
Yeah, I had there's like this homebrew channel. Wow, we just cut his tail. Wow.
How about that, huh?
Oh, wow. It doesn't happen too often.
I think the only valuable contribution I've made is I think I actually sliced his tail.
Good job.
He should be really close to capital.
Oh, we should have to paintball him. Oh, geez, yeah, this is a capture quest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is a capture quest. Okay, I have a paint bump with me. No problem.
Oh, I've got like a whole bunch. He's still okay.
Is he still okay? Okay.
He's still all right.
He's good. So there's actually, you can, for people who never fought the... Michael, have you fought the Global yet? Does he seem familiar to you?
No, this is not familiar to me.
So one thing you can do is to break his lantern. This shiny thing at his nose, I guess.
I've been aiming for it for a while now, but I'm not sure if I'm not really hitting it.
Yeah, it's very difficult to hit while he's on land. I think underwater it's much, much easier.
Also, when he's paralyzed or knocked out.
Oh yes, that's also because he lets it hang down to the floor, and you can kind of hit it. So anyway, so I had like this homebrew channel chilling out, but you know, I did the thing that Nintendo expects from me, and I installed all the updates on a regular basis, and some of the updates kind of printed some of the stuff, and I had to kind of go through this very, very long, incredibly scary manual on how to hack the Wii, and you know every second line in this manual.
Oh yeah, he's done. Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention. I was stabbing him because I was listening to you, Christian.
No problem. So here you can capture him now. Yes, you can. So who's going to put the bomb?
Put the trap up. I got the portable trap.
Trap, of course, not the bomb.
It's the easy shock trap in this game.
Nice. Where is he?
Oh, he's hidden.
Underwater. Okay.
Here he is.
There he is.
Wily. Very wily.
Well, yeah, underwater, I think he's much more difficult. I've been fighting him for in high rank for in recent times, and I'm struggling with his pattern underwater. It's difficult to see what he's doing.
Oh, no!
Oh,
there we go.
All right, then.
I was laying an additional shot. Oh, there we go.
Oh,
everybody,
wow.
It's a New Year's miracle.
Gosh, this is going to go in history.
To a global notice. I didn't think I was playing on a trap. I wasn't paying attention anymore.
Oh, people have been looking so long to this. Wow, a great highlight for...
It's a late Christmas gift.
Oh, to you, a shepherd offered his life.
Yeah. Wow. I wasn't even paying attention. I was just listening to you. Again, we promised my death, didn't we? Did we do that earlier?
Yeah. So how difficult was it? Because I've been thinking about doing some of the homebrew stuff on my Wii.
Well, for me, it wasn't difficult because I had the luck because I bought the Wii on release day, and it is quite an old Wii, so it doesn't have a lot of hardware securities that sometimes cause troubles. But it's a scary procedure, I can tell you, because you know, in this manual I had, like, every second line says, "Be careful! Don't do this because you will brick your Wii." Your Wii becomes unusable. And, you know, this is for me a horrible thing. I mean, I invested already 200 hours in Monster Hunter Tri. And if I brick my Wii, I lose all this progress. I mean, I still have my skills and everything. That's no problem, basically. But, you know, every items I collected, all the Raytheon plates and stuff like that, you know, all my armor and all my equipment will be gone. So I was really, it was really nerve-wracking to do this. But once I got through it, it was actually quite interesting because I was able to do things like copying save games.
Yes.
So one thing that we doesn't allow with some saves, like with Monster Hunter Tri save, is it doesn't allow you to copy it on a SD card. And I guess it's because they want to prevent people from duplicating accounts or hacking accounts, stuff like that. But when you install the homebrew stuff, you can install tools like it's called a save game manager, and it allows you to extract every save game on the Wii on an SD card. And what this allowed me also to take my save game data from the European version of the game and transfer it over to the American version of the game. So when I move over to the American servers right now to play with you guys, I could actually take all my equipment with me. So
that's very convenient.
That's incredibly inconvenient.
So on the other side of the benefits of the hacker community, I thought I'd tell this tale. I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter Freedom Unite. I recently got HR9, so I've basically finished.
Wow. Congratulations. Did you do most of that solo, or were you playing with other people?
Oh, no, I was playing with... this is online, so HR9.
Oh, okay.
I'm still doing the cat quests. Those quests are incredibly difficult. I was kind of amazed. But so I was playing. It was me and this random person. We were ranking up. I think we were HR... We were just getting into G rank, and we were stuck on a Cantor. And so we were sitting there playing, and we were doing some quests that we could do with just two of us. And this guy shows up, and he says, "Just put up whatever. I don't even care. Let's just fight. I don't care. I'll kill anything. Do you want tail carves? What do you want?" So we say, "Well, I guess we're going to put up a Cantor. Why not?" So we put up a Cantor, and we get all ready, and we get in there. The guy runs up to a Cantor. One swipe kills him.
No, that's pathetic.
It was like, what just happened? Oh my god. This is like the most badass of badass creatures in this game. He just walks up, just one hit. He said, "Oh, I forgot to get the tail. Put up another one." So another one, he cuts off the tail, and then so two hits, and he kills his monster.
Mm.
So that was kind of our, which, you know, at the time, it was sort of, oh, thank God, we don't have to deal with this anymore. Because we had fought a Cantor probably a good 10 times at that point. Our gear was barely good enough to fight him, and we kept running into people who weren't at the level that they needed to be. So we were excited that this random guy came in and was basically cheating and killing it. And it's hard to say no. You're like, what? I could have all of this really easy, these easy parts in this game that's incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't done it since then, but man, that was a unique thing that I saw, and I've heard about it happening in this game, which would be interesting.
Well,
I was under the impression that Capcom had like detections for cheats. Oh, by the way, Michael, if you want to eat, I'm going to host a meal again.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so you have to mooch a meal. Yeah, I'm kind of terrified right now because I did this trick, which I obviously we don't recommend this to any of our listeners. You know, this is a very highly dangerous thing, and you might get banned from using Monster Hunter, or you might brick your Wii or do horrible things to it. So, you know, we certainly don't suggest that you try to do it at home.
Yeah, I've heard of people getting like week or month or even permanent bans from Monster Hunter before.
Yeah, and I'm actually terrified of that. That might happen to me right now because, you know,
they might track you down. They're going to watch this podcast and say, "Get him!"
Yeah, they even know. Maybe you have to put like a you know, censor out my name or something.
Do we want to capture a barrel, or
yes.
Do we want to? Okay. Capture a barrel.
We are quite good in time, right? What time? How? Oh yeah, we're recording for half an hour, so we have.
Yeah, I have 30 minutes. Yeah, and that's fine. Do we want to answer another question?
Yeah, sure. We can do that as well. So here is a message from Tom. Wait, let me accept this quest before I take this question. So. The question is, hi, Tom here. First of all, loving the podcast and also the Let's Play. I'm just wondering, which is more useful on a Switch X? Shepard, this is for you.
That's for me. Yeah, I'm an expert on Switch X. Love them.
Yes.
Love them. Can't get enough of them.
So he wants to know, which is better, the Elemental File or the Power File?
That's a good question. I mean...
What are files anyway? I haven't used the Switch X too often.
Dig
into it.
Well, every Switch X has a file in it, and that's what powers the sword mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a gauge in it, and it fills up naturally on its own when it's in axe mode or sheathed. And then if it's below halfway, you can actually hit the R button to reload it and kind of give it a boost that way. And essentially, whenever you go into sword mode, whatever file you have will add a different ability to that weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it works is actually, I think I was a little wrong on this, to be honest with you, in one of my podcasts. Power files basically make every attack from your Switch Axe a critical hit when mm-hmm. it's in sword mode.
Oh.
So you get an automatic 1.25 boost to your raw damage.
This is amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Elemental files do the same thing, but they do it to your elemental damage.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there are dragon files, which add a dragon element but do not actually multiply the dragon damage, as far as I know. And then there's different... Well, there aren't really any different status files. In Try, there's only a paralysis file. But in that case, all you're getting is paralysis effects.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's the general mechanic. I'm not sure what high-end Switch Axes have power files, because I haven't really gone through them like that. But that's how you'll know. A power file is for raw damage, and elemental files are for elemental damage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So which one is better?
Well, I mean, you know, if you can get a really high-end Switch Axe with a power file on it, that would be great, because generally raw damage is better to use than elemental damage, only because monsters generally take more damage from that mm-hmm. than from elemental. But, I mean, whatever you have is fine. I mean, it's not a bad thing you're ever going to have, because you're going to be using the attacks really based on whatever you want anyways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, I mean, it's clear that we are not really big fans of the Switch X on this podcast, and but a lot of the people in the community are using them. And
well, apparently everyone that listens to this podcast not only loves Switch X's, they also love the motion control.
Yes,
that's all they ever want to talk about.
Yes, and also they want to see you die all the time.
Well, they just got their wish granted. So I am in just such bad form. Like, I've taken medicine. Like, I'm on, like, 2 ibuprofen. I'm not in any alcohol yet because that would kill my liver, but I would be on that, too.
Yes. And you're on hot drinks, I guess.
I wish. Oh, sorry, guys. Well, actually, that was a favor. I got you out of the range.
Yes, thank you very much. Michael, have you fought the Baroth yet?
No.
Oh, this is the first time you're fighting a Baroth.
Oh, yes. Yes. Fight him at least once.
I don't recognize him.
Okay, then because for the Kuropeko for me was like this huge emotional challenge because I read so much about it on your blog, but the Baroth for many people is the skill challenge because this is the monster many people are actually failing all the time and they.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, he's quite quick, and you have to, and he's doing quite damaging attacks, charging attacks,
yeah.
Stuff like
that.
He does
a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting that what you carry with you from previous sorts of video games, even back to the arcade era, how you plug in as a gamer the sense that, okay, what are his patterns? Like, what do I need to look for? When does he signal about to do X or Y?
Yeah.
But if I'm with Monster Hunter, they give you that with Monster Hunter, and then they switch it up.
Yes.
You know, like when you don't expect it, there's some little animation or there's some little pattern breaker that'll creep in that you don't expect, and so you can't necessarily rely on the tricks that you think you knew from before.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you had this incredible, I think, amazing blog post about, where you described how Monster Hunter is this game where you do the preparation, where it's very much about preparing for a hunt, and also a game that's incredibly rewards being watchful and rewards planning ahead and paying attention to what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, the games that give you the incentive to go back to your place and take your time and ponder different options, and that those options are actually viable, that there isn't actually always the optimal strategy or the single best way. It means that people are going to write you and ask you questions about, is this better, is this better? And you, actually, there might not be an actual, quantitatively correct answer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what Monster Hunter is about. And I think, even though you're just Hunter rank 10, which, I guess many listeners are going to say, oh, what's this guy doing here? I mean, he's not real Monster Hunter. And still, it's evident from the very first minute of the game that this is what the game is about paying attention, about thinking about what you're doing and choosing your own path.
Exactly. Exactly, and you learn from other players. I mean, I suppose that's true in most multiplayer games or like in World of Warcraft or whatever, but this is a gross overgeneralization. You guys would be way more able to know this than me. But I when I was playing this game much more frequently, I never had maybe one or two negative experiences with players in this game.
Mm.
I find that the community is... they're just fun to play with. I don't know why the Monster Hunter community seems to attract players that I don't know, they just seem to be a little bit more generous, a little bit more helpful than other multiplayer communities I've been involved with.
That's a good point. I think one of the aspects is that you're actually always fighting cooperative, so you're always fighting together against common enemy, and never fighting against other players, actually.
Yeah, and you're not climbing all over each other for the swag that gets dropped. It's not somebody trying to steal something from you or whatever.
Actually, I find it quite interesting that you can't even trade with other players.
Yeah, you can trade some small things. But
like drinks or
it's
something.
Yeah. Rarity 4 and down.
Yeah, I think so. Or Rarity 4? I think it was 3.
Yeah,
are you sure?
I think it's 3 down. 4 is when you can't trade.
Okay.
So I think that's a great point you made, Michael. I think what it is because unlike like first person shooters or RTSs or things like that, where you can come in with experience from other games and start it and already be awesome, with Monster Hunter, everybody that has ever played it, they've all started off completely getting demolished by something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, nobody started off, like, really good at the game. Like, you know, it's been hundreds and hundreds of hours for me, and I still die every once in a while.
Like today, for example.
And when you have that, like, it's, you know, you have to be humble. You know, you can't come into this and just be really arrogant about your playstyle all the time. I'm going to trap him just so we can do some extra damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Although my guess is that he's really close to being
captured.
He's
really close. He has to be close.
He's not flashing yet, though, which is the weird thing. Ooh. Right? I still have Capture Guru.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Well, we broke this Barath's head, actually, right now. So, I mean, that doesn't happen too often to me, personally.
It really does require a hammer or, like, really good use of bombs. I think he's ready.
I just had him in a trap.
I can't see because, like, your arrows are covering
Sorry
him.
Sorry about that. I didn't realize that.
No, it's okay.
He's tranquilized, so...
Okay, so he's probably not ready yet because we had him tranquilized and in a trap and he wasn't captured yet.
So, I recently, they figured out how to get Monster Hunter Portable 3rd onto the PSP Go.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about.
So you got it on your PSP Go?
Yeah, I've actually got the translation going. Almost all of the weapons are translated except for the bows, the swords, all of the menu items and stuff for the cats.
And you know, that's again one of those aspects of this whole you know, hacking or a homebrew community, you know, that you're able to do stuff like this, like fan translations.
Yes. But the interesting thing about that game is just going on what we were talking about earlier. I fought who's the Anteater? I think it's Aoshira is the mm-hmm. name that is in there.
The bug. Aoshira is the bear, I think.
Yeah.
Ranguro is the Anteater. He destroyed you?
Oh,
really?
The bear destroyed me because I didn't know what to expect.
When you first fought him?
Yes.
That's
he showed
funny.
Up in a quest.
And I was
like,
talking
oh,
about
geez.
How sympathetic people are, Monster Hunter. I am completely unsympathetic. That is hilarious.
I did not expect him to charge me and then start eating my face.
Oh, what?
I've never heard about
it. I don't think I fought this one. You mean the green bear?
It's the purple bear.
Oh, the purple bear.
He shows up. He's the HR1 urgent quest. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Oh, you mean online?
No, offline. Or the one-star urgent quest offline.
Okay. Yeah, then I guess I fought him. Hmm, okay.
He looks like a bear. His tongue's usually hanging.
Yeah, he's the one. Of course. I thought he was green. Okay.
No. Ugh.
Yeah, this Barath is really a tough guy.
I don't know what his problem is. He's not dying. Knock it off.
We don't even want to kill him. We just want to capture him.
He has to be so close. I'll put another trap down.
Oh.
There we go.
Oh, nice.
Bingo.
Wow, awesome.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, Barath, you know, is the Monster Runner, most people are asking questions on how to deal with this guy. He's really tough guy. He's really the monster where you first have to really pay attention, where the game says stop, you're going too fast, you're taking it like a normal game where you just mash buttons. In this game you have to block, in this game you have to watch what the monster is doing, in this game you have to really pay attention. Wow, and we actually get a lot of loot from him.
Yeah, we completed all the subquests. So all that, yeah, that was nice.
That's a very, very good thing. Right. Okay, yeah, so when you're talking about Monster Hunter, about the PSP, we have actually a good question on this subject. It's from Anonymous. And Anonymous asks us, hey guys, what do you think is better to play Monster Hunter on? A PSP Go or a PSP 3000? Thanks.
Oh, this is like the same question. What should I use, the Wiimote or should I use the classic?
There's only one answer we can give, and that's the PSP 3000.
Yeah, obviously.
What?
I mean,
Do you want to know my setup? My setup is kind of amazing. I'm going to tell you even if you don't want to know.
Go ahead.
So I bought the cradle, right? And it's hooked in to my television.
The cradle?
It has a cradle so it can hook up.
I see it.
It is plugged in, so it's got a permanent power supply. It's going to my television, and Bluetooth is on it, and I can play from anywhere in my game room on my television. So I recommend the PSP Go, but you're going to have to spend probably another $70 in order to be able to do all of that.
So you're basically using it as a home console.
Yes. Yes.
This is crazy. Well, I must say, I'm a big fan of the PSP, of the old school PSP, but I do understand the allure of the PSP Go because it looks quite nice and, you know, it has this cool sliding function. Actually, having it in your pocket, it feels like much more like a high-tech device. But of course, there is this big problem that it's very difficult or almost impossible to get Monster Hunter 3rd on it right now. If you want to get Monster Hunter 3rd on it, you have to get, you have to do some homebrew stuff. Right?
It's sort of amazing how much people can do through save game exploits.
Yeah, like you have to have a certain game and you have to order a certain demo and you have to start a demo and load a certain save game and then do something in the game and then the game crashes and then they exploit this.
It's just it's like the Wii had the Luigi's Mansion thing, right?
I used the Zelda Twilight hack.
Okay. Michael, I guess Brainy Gamer, what are your views on this sort of thing? And not to put you on the spot.
Yeah, you don't have to admit that you hacked anything.
I don't know. I just think, you know, when the console makers limit you in what feel like arbitrary ways, it's like you're just handing the community a ticket to say hack me. And I've never understood the decisions that they make, and you know, even other consoles, why is it that certain games on the PS3 I can slide my USB stick in there, take my save file with me and go play somewhere else? Other games, for no apparent reason, don't let you do it. And I've thought about it, you know, like, well, why would this game, is there something about it, or is there something about the properties of the game or the way the game works, or why would they sort of disincentivize transporting my save file? And I've never been able to make any sense of it. I've always thought that so many of these decisions that they make to limit your ability as a gamer to do what you want to do just feel arbitrary and kind of, I don't know, like, well, we've never done it that way, so we're not going to do it that way, you know?
Yeah.
And so people hack their systems.
It might be also something to do with, you know, different cultural things as well. Because, for example, I noticed that if you look at stuff like achievements, which is not really like save games, but there is this kind of also this, you know, different kind of culture going on. That, for example, if Japanese games are using achievements, then achievements are mostly hidden. So it's something that you stumble across, not something that you work towards.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 13, almost all of the achievements were hidden.
Yeah, and you see that in a lot of like JRPGs being imported, you know, or translated into English language. And you always see that the trophies or achievements are always hidden. And on the other hand, you know, in of course America or in the Western world in general, the achievements are spelled out for you and even contain spoilers sometimes. But you always see ahead of you, you know, what you're working towards. And it might be also kind of like the same thing with the save games. Like, you know, the people are the developers in Japan or maybe in certain countries. I don't know if it's a specific Japan thing, are much more protective are much more afraid of people hacking into this stuff.
I suppose. I wish they had a more careful way of really taking a look at the community and how they actually behave and how they actually use the systems, as opposed to these ways that seem to me to be fixed in tradition and corporate culture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, I kind of understand why they don't want you to transfer a Monster Hunter save on a save card, because and then obviously it opens up the possibility of people hacking their items. But on the other hand, you know, as we realize that, you know, you don't really fight against other players. So even if somebody gets this huge amazing armor because he cheated, you know, it's not like he's able to make other players miserable for doing that, right?
Right.
So there is not really a very big reason of being so protective. And the
I think the spoil sport is kind of prevalent in this game. I mean, the guy that came in and just kind of said, "Put up whatever, and we'll go fight it." It kind of takes away from the majesty of it. It's like, well, I didn't get to achieve this.
Yeah, I guess, and of course, there's always this thing, you know. One guy has been grinding this game for hours, and then some other guy comes in and he just, you know, changes the save game, and then he gets everything for free. That's kind of kind of unfair. But on the other hand, they are already quite protective of the game, of how the game works, and you know, people are still hacking it. So you know, ideas, you know, all these restrictions aren't really prevent people from doing the hacking. You know, everybody always finds a way to cheat in the game.
Yeah, but the number of decisions that particularly console makers, but also publishers make based on assumptions about the worst kind of people, you know, like we're going to protect ourselves against the people who are the worst cheaters. It's that horrible thing where the small number of people ruin the fun for everyone.
Yeah.
And it seems to me there's another way of thinking about that that says let's really maximize what our players who matter most to us want.
Yeah.
And if that means it's going to cost a certain amount of, you know, jerks who do it the wrong way, that's just the cost of it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, for example, you just mentioned you're actually working for a university, right?
Yeah.
And you said you were taking your Wii with you to your work, right?
Yeah, I put it in my backpack and I take it with me whenever I take it, you know, whenever I need it at work, or I'll sometimes use it in class. Mm-hmm. And it's the only system I do that with. I have a 360 and a PS3 in my office and homes, one each, and I never worry about it, you know. But with the Wii, I constantly have to pack it in my backpack because of the darn save file problem.
Yeah, because you just can't transfer it on the file. And actually, I have the very, very same problem also working for a university. And it's the same thing, you know. Whenever I want to take something, show something to other people, with other systems, it's not a big problem. I just always have a save game or some kind of memory card. But with the Wii, you always have to take it with you. And I'm actually quite afraid of what happens at some point, you know, when a new generation of Wii is coming out, and then suddenly probably we'll have to, you know, take everything, you know, everything we bought on the Wii channels and stuff like that. We will have to take it, you know, we have to buy it one more time, I guess. Or what happens if the Wii breaks, you know, stuff like that.
Exactly. This is, yeah, and I think...
Well, I know Nintendo can transfer it. You can,
they'll do it for you.
No. They'll do it, but you have to send it in, and it's a big to-do.
It's that same mentality. It's that, you know, father knows best mentality. You know, that the only way you can possibly fix it is to send it to Nintendo. Like, literally send the whole thing to them, and they will do it for you. I just think, you know, in a post-Steam world where we buy something and we have the right to use it then, and we can load up, Steam on another computer and just log right in and play, it just increasingly gets more and more absurd that these games I own, that I've downloaded from WiiWare or whatever, that I can only play them on this one white box. You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's great you bring up the whole Steam thing, because I think that's really Nick's main issue when he bought that PSP Go, is when he got that, I guess he was essentially assuming that Sony would look out for him and make sure that really the major releases at least would be brought out for it. And what did Gabe Newell say? Pirates are nothing more other than underserved customers? Was that his quote?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And, I mean, really, I mean, I don't condone it, but, I mean, at least in Nick's case, he really had no other option other than going out and buying a brand new PSP if he wanted to play Monster Hunter Portable 3rd, because there is no digital release.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Which is really quite a shame, because, I mean, this is probably the last greatest release the PSP will ever see, if not maybe an expansion to the Monster Hunter Portable 3rd, maybe Monster Hunter Portable 3rd G. But, I mean, for something of this caliber, you think Sony would have said, hey, you know, we're willing to pay you basically any amount of money, but just make sure you bring this game over. And they didn't do that.
I wonder what the reasoning behind it. That's also the problem. You know, there's no transparency behind it. No, they don't allow it something, but they don't really explain it. And it's the same thing here. You know, it's they didn't release Monster Hunter 3rd on the PSP Go, but they don't really explain why.
Well, I'm sure I can really explain Portable 3rd. I mean, it's got to just do with the bottom line. If you think about it, I mean, no matter the circumstances, Sony's going to take some portion of the proceeds out from their store, right? Like if you sell a game for $60, they're probably gonna get at least, you know, $5 out of that 60. In this case, you know, Monster Hunter Portable 3rd was a retail only release, and yet they still sold more retail copies than basically any other PSP game that ever that's ever been created.
Yeah, I heard that that the only reason why PSP is still working in Japan is Monster Hunter.
Yeah, you know, reason.
I had a friend visit me today that I haven't seen in a long time because she spent the last 2-3 years in Japan. I used to play Final Fantasy XI with her, which is kind of interesting. But, and a story for another time. I asked her, I said, how big is Monster Hunter over there? Like, what do you do? She says, everyone on the on every train, so it's a big train society, is usually playing Monster Hunter. It doesn't matter the age category.
Sorry.
Group that they're in, they're playing Monster Hunter. And I think Christian at one point, or was it you, Michael, who said there's Monster Hunter breaks in Japan now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Said, yeah, there really are. Yeah, Monster Hunter breaks. Instead of
I think they they take breaks instead of coffee breaks. They take Monster Hunter breaks.
Yeah, if you look at those numbers, their sales numbers are, it's eerily similar to Pokemon phenomenon. Yes. It's very same phenomenon, but I think And Black and White's done well there, but it's really a Monster Hunter thing now. It's I think it's hard to I think the demographics work in Monster Hunter's favor too in Japan. And actually, everybody plays it.
Actually, I have a friend over in Japan right now, and he's getting, you know, this entire culture shock in. And he will be coming back next week, and I'm expecting him, you know, to rave about, you know, how amazing Monster Hunter is in Japan. He already hinted on something like that in his the emails he sent me from Japan. Yeah, it seems to be like an amazing phenomenon. It's obvious, especially to people who aren't really familiar with it, because then for example, his girlfriend was also over there, and she saw. Like these lines, people waiting in lines for buying Monster Hunter, and she didn't realize, you know, she didn't understand that there was this game that everybody's playing, and you know, everybody was anticipating. So for her, it was like this weird phenomenon.
But as for why? Oh, there's Pekka.
Yes, Crow Pekka arrived. So, wait a minute. We haven't actually mentioned. We are doing a quest where we have to fight four great Jaggi, and Crow Pekka arrives as a guest in this quest.
That's nice.
And we fought. I think we already had three Jaggis. We've defeated three Jaggis, and now Crow Pekka is
fourth
here.
One is here.
Okay.
But what I was going to say about Nintendo, on our national public radio, so American National Public Radio, there was a series of news articles on video games.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are kind of interesting. Some of them, you know, they had some problems and stuff, kind of like outsider gamer culture making some assumptions and stuff. But there's a guy on there who they were talking about what Nintendo did.
Sorry.
Hey, that's all right.
But, like, Nintendo took the problem that American gaming has and tried to solve it. So, American gaming has a problem where we produce everything, and we don't limit the amount of copies that exist. So you have an oversaturation of a market, and that market generally gets too saturated, and then it collapses, because there's not enough room for all of the games that exist. So Nintendo came in and said, hey, we're going to limit this. We're not going to allow certain games to appear in our systems. You can only have so many copies in existence. And it's up to us. It's not up to you.
You mean the Nintendo seal of approval and stuff like that?
Yeah. So over time, that helped them. And it really helped the video game industry a lot, too, because, you know, a lot of the problems that we had before were gone. So I think Nintendo is still following suit, which falls into, well, that's the way it's always been.
We know better than you do.
I don't know if I agree with it, but it was definitely something that needed to happen at some point.
I'm kind of anxious to see
what the cloud does to people, like the Steam cloud and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. You know, that's like the different side of this coin.
Well, and I think it's interesting, you know, maybe the most locked down company of all, Apple, that wants to, you know, keep a tight fist on as much as they can. And even they have had to figure out how to be more open with their online app space, particularly with games, because it's just such a fast moving target. They can't possibly hire enough employees to like completely, absolutely review every single game up and down. Their approval process and their just the number of games that are on there. Number of things that appear on there, it's amazing. And they've had to loosen it up because the space is just so active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They just can't, they cannot control it.
And in many ways, it's kind of a smarter way of dealing with it, with the thing, because, you know, as I understand, you know, if you want to publish something on WiiWare, it's a very, very tedious approval process, and you know, kind of have to be a certified developer and stuff like that. You know, you just can't start developing right away. And of course, it's much easier to do. Oh, I'm sorry. it's much easier to do that on something like an iPhone, where it just costs, you know, it just costs $100, and you get everything you need to develop for an iPhone.
Well, it's interesting too, because I mean, you go to the Android.
And that's even
there's
easier.
No restrictions. Yeah. There's no restrictions at all, but people seem to be avoiding it, which I guess is kind of it. That's the most interesting thing to me. But it's because I own an Android phone.
There seems to be like there must be some kind of a balance there. I think, you know, there must be some kind of keeper of the platform who makes sure that nothing silly, nothing happens that destroys the market or kind of that is kind of bad for the climate in general. But on the other hand, you must allow people to do the things they want to do, because otherwise you aren't actually doing your customers any favor, right? And then you will introduce people who will try to exploit your system, like hackers who will try to to get the stuff they are looking for from your system.
And we're getting away from Monster Hunter.
We're getting
apologies.
Yeah, yeah. If you were expecting guys just talking about hit points, stuff like that, you know, this is not this kind of episode.
This is a bizarro cast.
This is a bizarro cast. Well,
Shepard dies? No one else dies?
Everybody is on drugs.
I'm heavily medicated.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm enjoying the conversation. This is really, like, when it comes down to, like, where is the future of gaming? Like, I think what attracts us all to Monster Hunter is really that high level of strategy, and, you know, when the game... Oh, nice bombs, Nick.
Oh, I missed.
Oh, wow, this is crazy.
You didn't... No, this is good times. Let's Trank. What was I going to say? You know, when it's so easy for this game to get overshadowed, I mean, that's really bad. You know, that's bad for everyone. You know, if the game doesn't get the sales number it needs, I mean, this in America, I believe, Tri only got something like 200,000 sales, maybe 300,000 by now. But I mean, you know, it should have gotten much more.
Yeah.
Did it finally hit 500,000? Okay.
Yeah, but I mean considering the market share that the Wii has, which at the time that the Wii was released or the game was released, I think it was like 2-1. For like the PlayStation 3 or the 360, it's just sort of surprising that it didn't sell more.
Yeah,
that's what I'm constantly trying to figure out. Like, what does Monster Hunter need to succeed like it does in Japan?
Yeah, yeah, and
because we have a bigger population here of people that play games, right?
Definitely.
I mean, Japan has some real enthusiasts, but in terms of overall, you know, total market size, I mean, America is so much larger. I don't know. I think the issue is who told me about this article? I read it. It may have not been from any of you, but a mother walks into a retail store. You know, she goes to the Wii section, and this is like the vast majority of Wii owners in the country, and she's not there to buy games. She's there to buy utility software. She's there to buy maybe a new Wii Sports or maybe a Wii Play or Wii Fit. But other than that, like when they look at total market share in the United States, I think a lot of these people that own Wiis aren't playing games. They just aren't interested in it. Like they actually say specifically, I don't want to play a game. I want something else for my Wii to do for me other than playing a game.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, there aren't a lot of HD TVs around yet. So, which is weird to say, but like a general person, like the general population isn't going to own an HD TV, or they're just going to have things that are hooked up. They might own an HD TV, but everything's hooked up through component.
Oh man, this is even
worse. Composite. Isn't that funny?
This is even worse over here in Europe, because here in Europe they are selling HD TVs, but you don't actually get a TV in HD.
Oh wow!
What?
Yes.
But why would they do that?
Well, it's kind of maybe you get some weird channels in HD, but generally no. HD as a concept hasn't arrived in Europe yet so much. At least you know in the broadcasting, you know in the signal that is being broadcasted.
But with the Netflix showing up on the Wii finally, it's like the people that were using the system not as a gaming system but just a utility on their television. Got like a huge boost. So suddenly these people all feel, you know, more justified in what they've done.
By the way, we don't have Netflix in Europe as well.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, and Germany is like the worst of the worst, though, when it comes to restricting content coming in, right? Even if Netflix was in the rest of Europe, I'm sure it would be blocked in Germany for some reason. Germany and Australia.
No, we get a kind of a bad reputation for that, but it's actually, you know, just, you know, very violent content is really restricted. But otherwise it's, we're kind of okay. It's okay.
Yeah, but you get to keep the nudity in your games.
Yeah, we're totally fine with nudity. Nudity is super.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I did a search on Brainy Gamer about Monster Hunter just to see, you know, where you mentioned Monster Hunter, because I wanted to find your Monster Hunter posts, and in there I found a very old post where you commented on cultural differences, and when you also commented on Monster Hunter 2, which I guess was Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, about how popular it was in Japan and how you weren't actually, you know, seeing this kind of enthusiasm for this game here in America. And you were commenting on all sorts of different differences between cultures. You know, for example, that racing games receive better reviews in Europe than they receive over in America and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've never quite understood why these differences exist. I mean, I guess we can just chalk it up to cultural differences, but I think if you read Edge magazine, for example, they like European games better than American magazines do in general. They particularly like English developers.
Oh yes.
And I guess that's kind of widely known, but you know, maybe they pay more attention to the work. You know, maybe we dismiss certain things and we all look more carefully at them. And I don't know. It feels to me like the American critical gaming press is kind of at a crossroads, trying to figure out who their market is and what they want to be. When you look at Game Informer, it's quickly becoming the largest circulation magazine in the country. It's past Reader's Digest.
Mm, yeah, wow. I thought it already reached that point. I was under that impression.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, not many people subscribe to magazines anymore, and yet whenever you sign up for a GameStop card, you get a free subscription.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
And,
yeah, so.
Yeah, and, well, and people are like, well, that doesn't count because GameStop's giving the magazine away for free. And that's how the world works now. You know, that's why USA Today has the circulation it does. And there are a lot of other publications that are figuring out new ways of getting their publication into the hands of an audience. And this Game Informer seems to me pretty savvy about that.
Yeah.
You can't.
Well,
just,
and I'm sure,
you know,
everyone that gets their copy of Game Informer at least flips through it and reads it. I mean, and if you can promise that to your advertisers, that's all you really need to have a publication, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And their I think that this, you know, look at what EGM's trying to do, and the, what are we going to be like online, and what are we going to be like in print? Can we do both? And Kill Screen, you know, and other magazines are coming back to print and sort of saying print is good, and we're going to up the ante on quality, and we're going to make a really good looking magazine. And then all these iPad apps, which are coming out, these sort of, you know, specially tailored to a device magazines. I mean, the whole space is in such a crazy upheaval. It's exciting, but I mean, who knows where it's going to go?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm completely jealous about this development, because I think in Europe, at least in Germany, we are still far away from this stuff. I mean, games are still not really recognized as something that people are doing, and we are, you know, the kind of secretion you're talking about would be unthinkable, I think, for a German games magazine. So, but, you know, we're kind of preparing that. We're kind of expecting that this kind of development will at some point arrive, you know, with some kind of delay, arrive also in Europe. And then we also will have to decide for ourselves where this the thing is going to go. Yeah. So we finished this quest with 4 Jaggy. I recently did this quest a couple of times to get the Jaggy mask, to switch the topics a little bit. And I finally got the Jaggy mask, something I never achieved in the on the European servers. So are we going to do yet another quest, or are we going to finish the podcast?
We can do another. It's up to you, Christian, because you're the one that's over in Germany, and at God knows what time. What is it, like 3:52 in the morning, 2:52 in the morning?
It's 2:52, but it's okay.
If you want to, whatever you want to do.
Well, I still have a little bit in my beer bottle. So if you're up to yet another quest, then maybe we can do a final quest. How about that?
Certainly.
Okay.
How about do Arathian?
Arathian. Ooh, that sounds intriguing. Let's do that.
Dangerous.
Have you done Arathian? You probably haven't done Arathian either, right, Michael?
I have, actually.
You have? Yes. Oh, wow.
I have done Arathian.
Oh,
yes.
So what was the result of doing Arathian?
Death.
Your death or the Arathian's
death?
Yes,
my death. Yeah, oh. I'm not, this is, I don't know, maybe once or twice. I don't think I've ever successfully completed it.
I must admit, Arathian is my favorite monster of Monster Hunter so far. I mean, she's basically like a very vanilla dragon. She's a green dragon. That's spewing fire, but I really like kind of the pattern, the attack pattern she has. You know, I really know her attacks quite well. You know, it still doesn't mean that I'm able to avoid of all the attacks, but I really feel like this is a monster that I know very well, and I enjoy fighting her for that very reason. So. Shepard, you're changing your gear. Should I put up the quests right now?
Yeah, go ahead. I just need to. This is going to be hard. I have to barbecue something. Does anybody have any rations they could give me?
I can give you some steaks.
You mean steaks?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I drank some beer because I thought that was our last quest, and I was going to equip like another. Charm, maybe perception. I don't know. I'd rather have focus, but I'm fine with the set that I have, I guess.
You know, the thing I wish that this game had that Monster Hunter Freedom Unite has is the cat balloon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
What's that?
The cat balloon. The cats are floating throughout most of the areas that you're in, right? So they're in a blimp above everything. If they're relatively close to you, you can wave at them. And they'll flash their light at you and tell you where the monster is. So it just kind of appears on screen.
So, yeah, sometimes when I'm standing at the gate, sometimes I see a blimp in the distance. I'm just kind of hoping that you know, that this is kind of like a cat blimp. But
yeah,
but you know, the game doesn't have this feature.
It's really useful, especially if you lose a monster. Like if it wanders off somewhere and the paintball wears off and you go to wherever it was and it's not there. If the cat balloon is above you, you can just wave and they'll say, "Oh, it's over here."
It's you know, it's one of those many really really charming and fascinating mysteries that, you know, they hit in the game, and you can kind of I just learned about how this works on our previous episode. So for me, you know, it's the game has so many beautiful mysteries and things to discover. I mean, it's really amazing. By the way, we are talking about the future of gaming and how things is going to change in the future. Here we have a very interesting question from one of our listeners about the future of Monster Hunter. It's from Goldfish Boy, and he asks us, do you think that a Monster Hunter game will come out on the 3DS? Seeing and hearing about its graphical and hardware capabilities, it seems like it could handle a Monster Hunter game. What are your opinions?
Well, the developer has gone out and said, basically confirming that very fact, that there will be a Monster Hunter on the 3DS.
Gasp.
Oh, yeah, wow. So there you go. So it's basically already confirmed. I mean, you know, hinted at, but we know how that goes.
So what do we think? Do you guys think it's going to be just a port of Monster Hunter 3rd, or will it be an entire new game like for the Wii?
It's kind of... I mean, you know, you're kind of like comparing... apples and apples when you're talking about Monster Hunter and ports. I'm sure it'll be an expansion of the Tri sort of universe.
It would kind of make sense that because it's a you know, it's systems with 3D capabilities.
Oh. It's what Nick, what are you using there?
What? I don't know what you're using. I have a bone hammer.
What? That doesn't look...
I don't know what you mean.
Ah!
Somebody was basically ruined by that.
Nick brought some
Cantor fight.
I think Nick brought some insanely overpowered weapons to this fight.
Oh, yeah.
That's good because I have a score to settle with this creature.
Oh yeah. We are basically going through all the monsters that did you any harm in this game.
And I appreciate that.
And we're taking revenge on them big time.
Well, you know, and in addition, because I'm obviously not as skilled as you are, all of you in this game, I have leveled up twice in this playthrough tonight. So.
Yes, me as well, actually. So this is really cool. Basically, the other day I watched a movie that came out recently. It was called How to Train Your Dragon or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yes!
It's such a cute movie.
That was totally a Naruga Kuga.
But I was reminded of Monster Hunter and how we are basically the evil Vikings fighting the monsters. If we just take away all our weapons, maybe this Raytheon is going to like us and maybe we can ride it.
So, I think Nick totally is an evil Viking right now.
Yes.
Did you see the amazing thing that happened there? Oh, man.
What happened?
I knocked her out of the sky and then knocked her tail off.
That was beautiful. I only saw the tail part. I just like walking behind Shepard. It's such a good view.
It is such a safe place.
Unless it's a global involved.
Unless it's a global, exactly. That's what I meant.
That's so sad.
Oh, no. Raytheon's gotten me down.
Good night. I got myself on the wrong side
but
of him.
I'm totally surprised that you are actually quite a good hunter, Michael. Because you've been fighting all these monsters, which some of them you never fought before, and still, you know, this is the first monster where you had any problems with. Oh wow! Okay, so there was a connection error, and we are back in the podcast, and we are recording again.
Okay, so
I flew out of the game. So what's going on?
We just finished. Well. I won't say we finished the Raytheon. We'll just start from here, and whatever the conversation is, I'll overlay it over the rest of the quest.
Okay, that sounds good.
We'll chalk it up to the gods of the podcast for this.
So yeah, I was quite surprised that Michael actually did so well with us today. You know, you've quite a good Monster Hunter, Michael.
Well. You guys kept me alive, we have to admit.
But on the other hand, I mean, you are a pretty good gamer. I mean, you've been playing through entire Demon Souls, which for me is something I haven't achieved yet. So big respect to you.
I rage quit that game and almost broke it in two.
Are you kidding me? How far did you get, Nick?
I died once, and then I started slowly working my way past like those first goblins at the gate.
Okay.
And I got to some point where something killed me, and I have no idea what it was. And I just got so tired of dying that I just turned.
That sounds totally like Demon's Souls.
That is Demon's Souls.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing too about that game is so those guys get you mad and you're on the edge of your seat, and then suddenly some malicious guy, a real person, enters your world and starts hunting you down. And that's when the game, to me, it just goes to a whole nother level, especially if that person coming after you is particularly malicious.
So yeah. This is a regular player?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that is malicious.
And you just see him, and you know he's coming, and you're not quite sure where he is, and then you start sensing his presence, and then you're just basically trying to equip yourself as best you can to prepare, hoping that you're not underpowered and hoping that you've got enough left, you know, on you. Maybe you've gone through a couple of rough fights before he ever gets there, so you might be weaker, and it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they stack the odds almost in your favor, because you can only be invaded while you're in human form, and you can also like bring up two other friendly people to come help you. But even still, I mean, there are so many abilities in that game that make you more powerful when you're a phantom and when you're also at low life, that oftentimes they can make themselves so powerful that they can get you in just one well-timed backstab.
Yeah.
Which is horrifying. I mean, there are videos of it out there. Entertaining ones, because it's just like there's like this one like 12 minute long video of this guy invading somebody else's world and slowly stalking him just before backstabbing him moments before he finished the level. Like, just being really cruel.
That sounds malicious. But actually, we were talking about this. I think there is a strong relationship between the gameplay of Monster Hunter and the gameplay of Demon's Souls. I think those two games are inherently related in the way, especially, for example, in the way such trivial things like combat works, where both games are about, you know, looking for certain tells and always, you know, planning ahead and understanding how the combo systems work. And also, you know, there are these long animations where you have to understand, you know, that certain animations take more time than others, and you have to understand how your animations are fitting into the animations of the enemy and stuff like that. And also, you know, both games are difficult, you know.
Yeah, and I love the experience of being just at the limit of what you're capable of doing. That you have to fight at the upper limits of your capacity in order to win. And you can do this in Monster Hunter too, of course, and you can do it in Demon's Souls. And I did. You get overpowered for certain areas, and you just go back and plow through them because you just want to do it, just because you remember getting hurt so bad before. You just want to take it out on those guys. But so often in Demon's Souls and in this game, you are working at the very limits of what you're capable of, and just a few mistakes will cost you dearly. That's the kind of gaming I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because in the high end of both games, two or three hits is all it takes to kill you. There's no quick healing either. And in fact, in many ways, you're almost more vulnerable healing in Demon's Souls than you are in Monster Hunter, because the monsters follow you no matter where you go. And times like,
well, that feeling too of you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
That feeling of limping off to a corner or to a safe place away from the creature just to get a potion, you know, like, can I just get over here and just reach in and get this out and get it in time? Yeah, that's a factor in both games. And then and sometimes you just can't manage it, and it's terribly frustrating, but it also makes you sweat.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And also this idea that you can lose so much, you know, for example, you know, there's so much at stake. So often I've been playing Monster Hunter and I've been having this epic fight of, you know, 40 minutes or something. And it came down to the very last few minutes, and I was really sweating to defeat the monster, or else, you know, this entire 40 minutes fight would be, you know, in vain. I would lose all the potions I used up, and would have to re-equip everything, and I would gain nothing from the entire fight.
So there's a Tigrex that you have to fight offline. So you're by yourself with your cat. And I was continually fighting this monster. Continually. I could not figure out how to beat Tigrex. Mm. I brought in a lance. I didn't think it was good enough. I didn't know what I was doing. I brought in a hammer. That didn't work at all. And what I kept doing is I kept trying to keep the monster away. I was like, okay, I'm just going to run in, hit the monster a bunch, and run out. With Tigrex, he covers so much ground so fast, you're just basically... I figured out you don't have a choice. You have to stand basically toe-to-toe with him and fight him, and that was the most terrifying thing I've ever done in a Monster Hunter game. That sense of accomplishment that comes with like actually defeating a difficult thing in a game, it's like it's weird because it's enhanced in this game.
Yeah.
In Demon's Souls, I haven't managed to overcome anything. So yeah. I can't talk about that. But this game...
Yeah, I think you're mentioning the very core. I think the very fascination of both games. In both games, you overcome these huge challenges, which seem so daunting at first. But then you kind of figure your way out, and you figure out how to defeat them. And if you do, then this achievement is so much more meaningful. You get so much tremendous boost of competence. You feel so competent in this world because you actually. You had troubles with this problem, but then you figured out how to defeat this problem on your own, and it's so much more meaningful than other games, which may give you all the answers to your problems. If you just wait for it, or if you in a tutorial or something like that, or maybe if you fail too often, they will give you a hand to guide you through the experience.
You as a designer, you appreciate this, I would imagine, Christian, in a way that maybe some don't, but the way that a good game design teaches you how to succeed. In this game, the monsters themselves teach you how to succeed.
Yeah.
And that is a very difficult thing to do. It's a lot easier to just make them powerful with cool animations and you just have to kill them or whatever, but there's a tricky way. There are tells, and you have to be patient, and there are little tricks, and there are things that occur randomly that deciphering these little puzzles that are these monsters in this particular game reveals, I think, a terrific amount of design expertise.
Definitely. But on the other hand, we have to also acknowledge that it also kind of expects a very certain kind of player, a player that is willing to go through this kind of lesson, a player that is, that sticks around even though he faces, he experiences this severe punishment at first, and he's willing to take this punishment because he understands that this is a part of the process and that is something that he has to go through it in order to improve at something. And it may be that these kind of plays are getting rare. That this is kind of a thing that was very common previously. In the very very early games, and that may be something that is not really that common nowadays.
I think the thing that I like is, especially with Capcom, you can tell that their initial design philosophy with like Mega Man and things like that, mm-hmm. it's followed them. They've developed that. They haven't tried to innovate in some weird way, try to get their audiences more interested into games that are completely new and different. They've taken the same mechanic and have like developed that, put more interesting things in with it, like what would happen if Woodman, you worked him down over a period of time, like, oh, well, if I was doing this, I would be able to get past him and things like that. I think that's the thing that's been interesting about Capcom. And kind of seeing that philosophy getting out into other games. We played that Lord of Arcana last mm-hmm. week.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting to see what that game does. Like, is it going to hand you monster parts? How are they going to interface? Because Square doesn't necessarily design games that are easy.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
More and more they're getting easier, though. It's not like it used to.
Especially if you look at Final Fantasy XIII, which consists of basically corridors, which you just go through, right? So they're suddenly they take away all this exploration, which was such a big part of older games.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the combat could be interesting. I just but the exploration would be moved.
13 opens up, though. It really does. You're going through these corridors, these very tiny spaces, and then it just opens up and everything is everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the most unexpected things I think I saw in that game. I was really disappointed until I ended up there.
Yeah, but even still, like, the designer came out and said he did that for a reason. Like, his purpose was to do something experimental and kind of... I mean, in a way, it was kind of brave in that he was saying, here's something... that we think gamers might appreciate. And that rather than wasting their time checking out different corridors, we'll just give everything to them like right in a one plate. And it failed, but I mean, it was a worthy attempt, I guess.
Well, it's a noble attempt to try something very risky and
especially it's such a large game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
enormous budget. I don't know what the budget is, but I'm sure it's been bigger than any game they've ever produced before, or at least will be until they release Final Fantasy 15. I don't know how much 14 has cost them, but I'm sure that was a lot too.
Oh God, 14. But we won't talk about that.
No, we won't get on our own time, Nick. We'll get into what you think about that because I know you have experience in that realm.
By the way, are you still guys still fighting the Wraithian?
Oh no, we've been back for a while. It's just that there's a rando in here.
Oh, there's a person preventing me from.
Oh, should we ask him to leave? I mean, he was pretty excited that he's in the podcast. Yeah, his name is Serene. And I'm sure. Well, we're pretty much finished, though, right, Christian?
I guess so. Yeah.
It's so late for you, Christian, and we're getting to the about almost an hour and a half mark. And I know we have a rule about podcasts; it has to be like between 45 minutes and like an hour and a half.
I think an hour and a half is like the upper limit. So we're reaching our upper limit, and people on the YouTube are probably at this moment are thinking, "Why am I listening to this very very long video on YouTube?" Like, this is the longest video I've ever watched on YouTube.
There were some pretty amazed people when they saw my videos were going over an hour. They're like, this is the longest video ever. And it's just a new development. YouTube has allowed certain more active producers of videos. They can upload any length video they want as long as it's under 4 gigabytes.
That's just great. So,
this is great.
So I have no real limitations. Christian, you used to comment on my self-imposed time limits that were always revolved around YouTube's time limits. So yeah. I originally said, you know, I must beat this monster in under 11 minutes because YouTube only allowed 10 minutes and 59 seconds. Likewise, they then increased it to 15 minutes and 30 seconds. So I'm like, oh, I got a little bit more breathing room here. But usually whenever I had that, it was just more of me running around and less of me actually fighting the monster. And now that it's completely up, I show everything. There's no cuts at all. The only thing I cut out is I cut out some loading times, and so you get full Shepard all the time.
We're showing it all. We're doing it live.
We're doing it live.
We're doing it live, even if you die.
Even, well, you know, there's no going back. I mean, we've got a podcast you got to put out there, and you know, everyone dies every once in a while. I mean, I've never said that I'm a perfect player. I mean, there are players out there. I don't know how many takes it took them, but you'll see them fighting monsters without taking any hits at all. So there are those people on YouTube. I am not one of them. I usually don't die, but I get hit all the time, so there you go.
That's okay. I think everybody got especially our listeners got what they were expecting from
well, only because it was like the end of the quest, it was already beaten. I was just like dropping a second unnecessary trap right in front of the goblin. It's always, but can I? Did he land in the trap that I set? I probably got killed before it got set, didn't it?
I don't know. We have to go back and replay.
Gotta go back to the footage. Well, I won't be able to see the footage because I was dead.
Well, I think we have to put this episode to a close. Sadly, because I would be able to podcast with you guys, you know, the entire night, especially when Michael's with us on board. Because I mean, this discussion I think today was really amazing. I was really enjoying it a lot.
I mean, you're welcome back anytime you want, Michael.
Yes,
I mean,
definitely.
This has been
thank you, and I appreciate you guys. You know, I'm like I said, I'm not quite in your league as a player, and I appreciate you kind of helping me reacclimate to the game. We were talking before the podcast. I was really into this game for a while, and it's been months and months since I played it. And I mean, ramping myself back up to prepare, I just didn't realize how much of it slipped through my fingers. I really had to learn how to use the controller again. So I appreciate your help.
Oh, well, you definitely, I think you've shown that you're definitely up to the task. And and that's what I'll always enjoy about the Block Your Buck as well, because, you know, you're such an experienced gamer. But as well, but you're also commenting on the games in a very, very interesting and very inspiring fashion. By the way, I think a lot of our listeners are not really familiar with your stuff, so where can they find you?
Just come to brainygamer.com. And you can also come to vintagegameclub.org. Those are the two things that I do, I guess, most often. I also write a column periodically for Gameset Watch or Gamma Sutra. And if anybody happens to be going to the Game Developers Conference after the new year, and I'll be there, and let's chat about games.
Oh, of course. So, well, thank you for being with us today, Michael. It was really, really a great pleasure. And also thank you to our listeners who sent in questions. Please do keep them coming. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can simply write us an email to monsterhuntercast@googlemail.com. And also you can go on our Tumblr blog, which is monsterhunterpodcast.tumblr.com, to write us a message. You can also, of course, comment on the YouTube video on Shepherd's channel. I think the next episode will be next Friday. Is that true, guys?
Yeah, that's no problem. I mean, I don't think there's anything keeping us from doing that, right?
Okay, if we are going to do it next Friday, then I might be able to do some very, very exciting special feature. But this is going to be a surprise, so our listeners can look forward to something very, very exciting Monster Hunter related.
Well, I'm pretty excited about that too. Oh, I don't know what it is, but I'm excited.
It's going to be a surprise. It's going to be amazing. So we wish you good luck. We wish you a good hunt. And remember, please don't tell anyone I hacked my Wii.
Oh man. Well, I don't think they know your special code, so I think you're in luck.
Oh yes. Ooh, I dodged that thing, but just to be sure, just, you know, maybe we can censor something out.